From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 30th, 2021. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I ban you from the show.
It was a joke, man.
Just kidding, lighten right?
Up. Lighten up.
Yeah, we take this shit seriously. Sorry, I swore on the show, but you got to ban me now, I guess.
Yeah, now you're getting a Twitter ban. all right, poker pro Scott Robbins has sued the Borgata for $1.25 million after the casino gave him a lifetime ban for what he says were jokes he told a front desk clerk when checking into his hotel room. The conversation apparently began when the clerk asked Robbins if he wanted a room on a high floor or low floor, and Robbins made a series of comments about wanting to jump out of the hotel room window. Security made him undergo and pay for a psychological evaluation, which Robbins said he passed, but the hotel packed up his belongings and banned him nonetheless.
You know, I don't know how to feel about this.
I think there's a lot about that, a lot on the show about that today, but
yeah, exactly. You know, God, it's crazy. And then they make him go through all this stuff, and then they still just say, "Okay, you still got to go." I'm just a little confused by it. I don't know. You know, it's he said, she said kind of stuff.
Yes, none of that. Yep.
Right, but you know, I've read a lot of the reactions from our friends on Facebook about it, and a lot of people agree with the Borgata. You know, I'm not falling for that. You know, that whole fallacy crap where you know ad populum, where just because everyone says that's the way it should be, that's the way I should think. You know, I'm going to think for myself on this, and I mean, how many times have I, you know, joked around where if I said, oh, if I got to do another episode of this show, I'm going to open a vein and bleed myself to death in a tub, you know, but I'm not really going to do it. You're not going to ban me from the show and make me go through, you know, psychological evaluation, right? I mean, there's that side of it. And then there's also, hey, you really shouldn't be talking like that in public because people are going to, you know, they don't know. And if they don't do anything and then you die, you kill yourself or something, right?
So they don't know whether you're joking.
Yeah,
or not.
Exactly.
That's the difference between those two scenarios that you just mentioned, right?
So,
I mean, I usually come down on the side of the business on these things because it's their business. You know, the analogy I use all the time is, you know, if your friends ask you to take your shoes off before coming in their house, they're not censoring you. They're not telling you what to do. They're just telling you what you need to do in their house, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You want to take your shoes off, you can go to your other friend's house that doesn't give a crap whether you track in mud, right? So if you don't like what the Borgata does, then you don't go to the Borgata. So that's generally how I look at these things. So that's part of it for me. The other part is, I mean, and it's probably a policy at this hotel, probably a lot of things that, you know, the last thing you want is some lawsuit from a family that says, hey, our son or my husband or whatever told you he was going to jump out of the window and you didn't do anything about it. And now he's dead and now you're liable.
Right? Yep. Yep.
So, I mean, and again, if you don't know this person, you have to assume that they're being serious, even if it sounds like he's chuckling. Right. So like if you go back to like our call the floors is a waste of all the time. I'm like, just don't do this stuff and you don't have to deal with the problem of it. Right.
Right,
so
right.
You don't make these bad jokes, and I will say they're bad jokes. Then you never got banned and you wouldn't have to, you know, pay for the psychological evaluation and now run up a big legal tab trying to sue a company that you're not going to get any money for. You're not going to win this. You're just not. Right. And then, you know, I guess, and I'm really hesitant on going down and wokedom. I'm not that kind of person. I'm very centrist on this stuff. But I have tried to, eliminate the kill myself jokes from my repertoire. Cause again, I'm not serious about it. I know you're not serious about it, but it's, you know, as society changes, you do different things now, and it's not censorship or wokeism as much as just society changes. You know, I'm like, you know, I had to explain to somebody a couple years ago why you're not allowed to say retard anymore, right?
And right.
They just said about it, but I'm like, I think that's a good thing. I mean, it's society's getting smarter now, and all of society needs to be on the same level. So, So I kind of think this is a little just reminder that, you know, you can be funny. I like to be funny. I hope I'm funny. But you don't have to be. I mean, there's ways of being funny without that don't cause pain or stuff like
that. Or make light of the idea of doing something that people struggle with every day. Right. Exactly. Right.
No, I'm sure most people aren't on board with that thought, but if you're not, then at least be on board with the thought that, you know, a business has a right to refuse service to you. So, you know,
that's right.
To, you know, I mean, you wouldn't walk through the airport saying, I've got the biggest bomb ever in my suitcase, right? So don't suggest that you're going to jump out of a 50-floor window when you're checking out the hotel. But easy enough. Problem solved, right?
Yeah. Hey, so I have to ask, was your Take Your Shoes Off reference or Curb Your Enthusiasm reference, or was that just you coming up with it?
It was not a Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Okay. That was a classic episode.
No, it was, you know, I moderate this local community Facebook group that's been tremendously difficult to moderate. And I want to give a shout out to all of our Antia fans and Antia fans because we've had like zero problems on that group.
Right, right.
And I have a daily headache on this community one just because that's what it is. But yeah, you know, we went through this whole thing during this COVID where we were talking about censorship and, you know, you can't do this and that and that. So that was where the analogy was. But I always kind of tell people that because, you know, again, we're journalists. We've been journalists our whole lives, right? Mm-hmm. So First Amendment's a big deal to us, right? But the First Amendment doesn't mean you get to say whatever you want to say.
That's right.
Without consequences. It just means that the government can't tell you what you can't say. So, but you're still going to have consequences. Yep. And if individual people don't want to hear your bullshit, I'll go ahead and say it, since you smart too, we'll book you. then they don't have to. Get out of my house, right?
Right.
I'm not censoring you by kicking you out. You can go somewhere else and say that BS wherever you want.
Yep. So
quit throwing around this censorship BS. It's just a tired argument for me.
But, awesome. Yeah.
Soapbox one today. There'll be another one.
There's going to be a few.
All right, here's the latest update in the Mike Postol saga. Victoria Brill and Todd Whittles, who were awarded damages over Postol's aborted defamation suit, are now seeking to have an involuntary bankruptcy declaration made for Postol, which allowed them to seize Postol's property to pay for the damages. The court has not been able to locate Postol to serve him with the final judgment.
You promised that he wouldn't be on the show anymore.
Hey, I can only promise what he doesn't provide.
Oh, man. See, you are funny. You are funny. I mean, not just looking either. I can't make funny anymore because I got an email the other day from a fan who was like, hey, you got to stop making fun of Scott. It's not cool. And I'm like, dude, seriously, he makes fun of me all the time. But all right, so I'm taking it easy on you today. But yeah, seriously, they really want to just punish this guy. And, I mean, if he cheated, he deserved it, but...
Yeah, punish is probably the wrong word. They just want what's legally coming to them.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I find this interesting, because, again, I'm not a lawyer. As many as Morgan & Morgan commercials I've watched. So I was not aware of involuntary bankruptcy, because from the beginning, and we even talked about this on the show, I was like, hey, good job, Victoria and Todd, for winning these judgments. Good luck getting anything out of them, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But knowing now that there is this thing called involuntary bankruptcy, and, you know, it seems if the court cannot find this guy to serve him with the judgment, let alone anything else, that is an effective way of getting some of your damages back. So, all right, good for them. But
how concerned should we be that they can't find this guy?
Well, I mean, would you want to be found when you you just sued a bunch of people for $330 million and said, "Oopsie, I'm not really"? And then I don't know. I mean, I don't think Mike is CIA level. I don't think he's like gone forever here, but. Mm. But I don't know. I'm like, you know, obviously, I mean, all signs point, and I can't say this for certain, but I'll say all signs point to him being in serious debt in lots of other ways, right? In addition to this. So, you know, I wouldn't want to be found if I was him. I mean, I don't know where you go. I mean, I've seen a lot of movies that show people. I mean, Jennifer Garner went all the way over to Asia and came back in peppermint. So, how that happened, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think it's easy to hide. I think, but you know, I also watch a lot of Unsolved Mysteries, and there's a lot of people that go missing for 30, 40 years. Look at Whitey Bulger, man.
Yeah, yep.
Oh, he's just hanging out in Hollywood, and no one even noticed him. So I don't know. We'll see what happens here, but it's an interesting. Every day I learn a little bit more about the law, whether I went to or not, so we'll see what happens.
Wow.
All right. With the surge in COVID cases, largely among the unvaccinated, the governor of Nevada has re-implemented an indoor mask mandate, meaning all employees and patrons of casinos in Las Vegas and Reno must wear a mask when indoors, regardless of whether or not they are vaccinated. Also, two casinos in Mississippi have required all staff and guests to wear a mask again, as have all Los Angeles County card rooms.
Here we go again.
Yeah. All right. So let me start here. I know you have things to say, too. So I'll be the bad guy first, and then you can be the bad guy.
Okay.
I don't think we have a good guy in this scenario, right?
Right.
We try really hard to steer away from controversy on this show, I think. As we've gotten a little bit older, maybe we've in that regard. But generally, you know, this is not an in-your-face poker podcast, right? This
right.
is a lightly having fun and talking about the news and educating you kind of podcast. So at the risk of losing listeners, I'm going to say this. If you are not vaccinated, go get your shot today. Just do it. I'm sorry. You're just going to have to do it. Please either educate yourself on the vaccine or re-educate yourself on the vaccine, because you are now affecting my life, and I take offense to that. Yeah. I am getting ready to get on a plane and go to California for a couple of weeks. My wife is coming out. We're going to drive around Lake Tahoe. We're very, very much looking forward to this vacation. And because of the unvaccinated, we are going to have to wear a mask again. And that upsets me to no end.
Yeah.
To no end.
Yeah. I can't agree more. I just don't get it. I mean, it's when did it become political to take care of yourself and to take care of others, you know? You know, polio got eradicated. Why? Because we all got the shot, you know? How is this any different? It's just, it's ridiculous that this is happening. And they're trying to, even governors of these red states are trying to make it sound like they're being lied to about the death rates of these people who are dying, who 90 whatever percent of it are people who are unvaccinated.
Well, here's the funny thing about this for me, and I don't know why I always say funny, because I don't have to qualify that by saying what I mean by funny is sad, but or ironic or whatever. It's not funny, but there's a lot of things going on here right now. But one of the interesting things to me is that this used to be political, I think. I don't think it is as political now as it used to be, and I say that for a couple of reasons. One, of my friends who are unvaccinated, it is probably 50-50 liberals and conservatives.
Hmm.
I have liberal friends who's like, I just don't trust the vaccine. And I'm like, oh boy, re-educate yourself. You can trust the vaccine. So it's the same. So that's a shift, I think, right? Because before it was, I think it was more red than blue on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know if you saw this, but this last week, the Alabama governor, a Republican, came out and said, hey, we don't have a COVID problem. We have an unvaccination problem. Now, I will disagree on the first one, but the second one, I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
Our governor here in Florida, Republican, has said the same thing. This is a problem for the unvaccinated. The president of the United States came out this week and said, this is a problem with the unvaccinated. So it's all political parties are telling you that the unvaccinated are causing these problems. And if you get vaccinated, we can kill this thing. We can get rid of it. You just got to get a shot, and it's free. It's a free shot.
Mm-hmm.
And now at this point, I mean, I had somebody reach out to me. They want me to help them plan a vaccine drive here. And he sent me to this Twitter exchange the doctor had where she explained how to make this work, and she's like, and you have to give these people something. It doesn't have to be a lot. You'd be amazed at how many people lined up to get a vaccine because I gave them a free empanada.
Wow.
I mean, it boggles my mind to no end, the reasons that people don't want to get this vaccination, but then you give them a $3 empanada and they're in line. So I'm happy if our government buys empanadas for everyone, if that's what it takes. But let me go a little bit farther. For the listeners who are probably fuming right now, if they're still listening. This is a poker podcast, right? So let's talk about what this means for poker going forward. So, and I know you can get all upset at government that overreaching when they, you know, reintroduce these mask mandates and stuff and say they're overreaching, and we can agree to disagree on that. But at the end of the day, they're the ones that control this. And not just that, but the casinos themselves control what they want to do. These casinos in Mississippi, they weren't mandated to do this. They did it on their own to protect their business, going back to the Borgata example, right?
Yeah.
And so until this COVID is gone, we are going to be dealing with this weirdness in casinos, whether it's plexiglass, whether it's sanitized hands, whether it's wearing masks, which you may find that fun. I don't. I'm happy that I missed all that. I don't want to go back to when I missed it, right?
Yeah.
But to a larger extent on the poker, I mean, this is probably going to keep more poker rooms from reopening. So if you are up in Massachusetts and you're part of those people that are poker players who are legitimately upset that poker hasn't come back to Encore or MGM Springfield or any of your local card rooms that haven't opened, this doesn't help. I mean, this is all the more reason for these casinos to continue to keep these poker rooms closed. And who knows? We honestly don't know if there are poker rooms that might have been getting ready to reopen, and now with this new surge and these new regulations, they're like, whoa, we got to pump the brakes again. I mean, I'm not going to open a poker room now just to shut it down in a week, right?
Yeah.
So if you're unvaccinated and you care about playing live poker, you can't have it both ways. You just can't. I'm sorry. It's not going to change. Poker rooms are not going to reopen. Some might close if you don't get vaccinated. It's that simple. So, you know, if you don't want to get vaccinated, I hope you have online poker in your state, because I don't think you're going to get to play live much more longer. It's frustrating, super frustrating. And as business owners, it's killing us, you know. I mean, if you're listening to the show and you care about us, please do us a favor. People always email us and like, hey, we love the show. What can we do to help you out? Today, I'm telling you, get the vaccination. That's what you can do to help Anthony up out.
Wow, as well said.
Off a second soapbox.
I almost want to start publishing the magazine again, so you could write that for our publisher's column.
I'm going to keep the soapbox a little longer. It's frustrating because I've been silent on this for too long. I mean, in private with people, I will go off on it. But when I'm with friends that aren't vaccinated and I got family that aren't unvaccinated, I don't get in their face about it. I listen to them and then I just shake my head as I walk away. And part of me now is starting to think that I'm being reckless in doing that. That I'm not like engaging those folks. The frustration for me is that I've never changed. I can't recall my entire life, 49 years now, that I've ever changed a behavior because someone shamed me.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
So I don't think that shaming people is going to get them to do what I want to do, because I don't think it's going to work on me. So I've been very cautious not to join the Facebook shaming or in-person shaming or anything like that. And then I got to this point too, you know, once I got vaccinated, I was hanging out with some friends and they were still a little cautious about going out and stuff. They're like, hey, COVID's still out there, Scott, even though you're vaccinated. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. But I don't care now. I've done my part. I've gotten myself vaccinated. I've given too much to this disease. You know, my business is fragile now. I've lost 4 friends. I'm an extreme extrovert, and being locked in my house for a year is mentally anguishing, right? Mm-hmm. So I've done my part now, so I'm going to go out and resume my life. I think you should too. Because those people that aren't vaccinated, we're not going to be able to talk them into getting vaccinated. So that's just, this is how the world's going to be. I did not anticipate this last week.
Yeah.
I did not anticipate that this is going to get so bad that we're going to be forced to wear masks again and do some of this other stuff. I did not anticipate that. So now I'm upset, because that is, you are kicking me and walking all over me, and I've done nothing to you to cause you to do that to me. So super, super frustrating. I do feel encouraged for a couple things. And this is casino related. So the MGM resorts in Vegas, I don't know if you saw this, 2 days ago announced that all their employees who aren't vaccinated need to get COVID tested every week at their own expense. $15.
Nice.
So if you're not vaccinated, you come to work, I got to take a test, and I get $15. And I'm like, all right. And like now, what I'd love to see is to flip that and make that for patrons.
Yeah. That's
the problem, right?
Yeah.
If you want to come here and gamble, you either have to be vaccinated or you're going to have to take a test and you got to pay for that test. Now, I know in a dream world that's not going to happen, but there's things that are lining up now. And then, you know, I was like, oh, employees can't or companies can't force their employees to get vaccinated. Well, there's a lot of them that are saying, yeah, we can and we are and we'll go to court. So there's things like that going on. And then the Pfizer came out and said, hey, our third vaccine is super effective. Now, I mean, it hasn't been peer reviewed, but I'm like, all right, hey, I'll get a third shot. I don't care.
Yeah, me too.
First two shots were fine. As long as I'm not paying for it, keep shooting me all you want. If I can get back to normal life, that's what I will do. But So I think there's some things going right now other than just the cranky old guys from the Muppet Show that have an Antioch podcast whining to you on the show today. But it's going to be interesting this next month or so. Whether people do the right thing or not. So, we'll see.
Okay, very good.
Here's this week's update on poker room reopenings. In Nevada, Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino has reopened its poker room. In New Mexico, Sandia Resort and Casino has reopened its poker room. In Oregon, Wild Horse Resort and Casino will reopen its poker room on August 23rd. And we now have 265 reopened poker rooms in the United States. AntiupMagazine.com/reopen lists verified details of poker room reopenings. If you have updates, emails at editor@antiupmagazine.com. And we are also emailing a weekly e-blast with updates that you can subscribe to on the homepage at antiupmagazine.com. And I'll just say one more thing before you move on to any updates. This Mandalay Bay is really interesting because this was one of the casinos that had told us that they permanently closed the room.
Yeah.
So if you go to our reopens webpage, we will tell you whether a room is permanently closed. And if it's not permanently closed, then we'll just say it's temporarily closed because we don't know, even though we assume some of them are probably permanently closed. So this is interesting that a room that had announced that it is permanently closing its room has reopened. So we still have rooms that the casinos seemingly want to reopen at some point that haven't reopened. And here's one that said, hey, we're done. We're out of the poker business. And then, oh, hey, guess what? We're back.
So. Yeah, it's very encouraging. I mean, that's even though we've got a lot of bad news today, that's still encouraging.
Yeah, and again, it's only encouraging as fragile as this is. So hopefully next week we still have more reopenings. That's what I'm hoping for. So we'll see.
All right, as Scott alluded to, here are any updates. The Antiup World Championship will be at Thunder Valley Casino Resort near Sacramento, California, August 13th to 29th, with satellites beginning August 6th. There will be 17 events over 17 days with $1 million in guaranteed prize money, including the $1,650 main event August 27th to the 29th with a $500,000 guarantee. For the schedule and structures, visit ThundervalleyCasinoResort.com and click on the Poker tab. Papes, the Antiup Fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th of every month and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Antiup Fans Group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call-the-floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. As Scott mentioned, our fans page is awesome. No problems. Nothing to worry about. And check out our vintage Antiup logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Antiup Magazine, Antiup PokerCast, or Antiup Poker Tour logos. Finally, if you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call the floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the aforementioned Antiup Fans group on Facebook. Each week, we spotlight a listener who emails us, and if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, specializing in poker odds and math at poker911.net. This is Cody from Nashville. He said, my nearest legal poker room closed during COVID. What happens to the bad beat money that the casino collected from the poker players while it was open? The primary was close to $200,000, along with the secondary that was less. I feel kind of cheated that I was charged for the bad beat, and now none of us has a chance to get the money back. What typically happens to the bad beat money when the poker room is closed?
All right, first of all, I want to give you high kudos, Chris, because you are always the bigger grammarian of the two of us, always correcting my Facebook posts, even my funny ones. And you, I don't know if you did this on purpose, but you corrected the grammar here by saying none of us has a chance when something has happened.
Yeah. So,
I don't know if that was like memory or whether you saw that, but either way, golf clap.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks, buddy. Yeah, on the fly, my mind works that way.
Very impressive. Okay, so we have mentioned this, I think, before on the show, but it's a good reminder. The answer to this question is it's different in every jurisdiction. So I'll give you a general idea, but I did tell Cody to contact the Gaming Commission in his state for an actual answer. I mean, not an actual answer,
explanation.
But a firm explanation, right?
Yeah.
But typically, Gaming Commission's mandate that this money go back to the players in some form or fashion. Obviously, the poker room's not open for somebody to hit a bad beat, so that's out. But they do have to give the money back in some form or fashion. So, and that's been done in different ways throughout the years. So, you know, there was one that had a big free roll tournament and invited players that contributed the bad beat. That's why it's important to always use your player club card so they know you contributed to it, right?
Yeah.
To come and play, or they use that money to seed a tournament that allowed other players to get in, to pay, and you got free entry if you contributed or something like that. So that's one way to do it. Other ones have done, drawings or raffles. So there's a lot of creativity, I believe, involved in how a room can give this money back. But I'm not aware of any Gaming Commission myself, and if anybody's heard differently, let me know. But I'm not aware of any Gaming Commission that allows a casino just to keep this money. I think it's always mandated that this is the player's money and has to go back in some way. Now, it may not be in the poker room. I recall a poker room bad beat jackpot being awarded in, three card poker or something different in the pits, which is not as cool as those other ideas we gave you. But one way or the other, that money will get back to players somehow. So just pay attention to when they announce that.
Yeah, agreed. That's pretty much it, because it has to be illegal for them to just keep the money when they've set these sort of parameters of why they're taking your money. So you should be able to get that money some back in some fashion. And that's the other thing, too, is if they categorize poker as part of the pit, then it might have to be a blackjack tournament or something like that, which sucks. But, they're still going to have to pay that money out somehow.
Yeah, so there are definitely terms and conditions. I mean, a lot of poker rooms have these posts on the wall in, like, 9-point type that no one reads.
Right.
But if you're bored and waiting for a table, I always encourage you to read it because it's kind of interesting. But even if it's not posted, they have terms and conditions on, how they can collect this money from you, how they can give it back out, and part of that is what they are allowed to do with it, or what they have to do with it, I should say,
right.
If they close. So all those things are already written. I mean, no one does this on the fly. So,
okay, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been. Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We'll have Rivers Casino Schenectady Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is a set up of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Antiup Poker Cruises, available at classicplayingcards.com. This is Ken Douglas. He says, I was playing 2-4 no limit hold'em in a Las Vegas casino when this hand came up. Player A is an older gentleman who speaks broken English. Player B is a 30-something-year-old local who appears to be regular. On the river, player B bets $40. Player A is directly to my left. I do not see the action as I was checking my phone, but I hear him announce all in, and he throws a single $1 chip in the pot. The dealer announces all in and places the all in button in front of him. Player B goes into the tank for about 20 seconds before saying that he thinks player A's single chip hit the felt before he announced all in and it should be a call. He says he has to protect his interest in the hand and asks for the floor. Player A is agitated and is trying to explain in broken English that he intended to go all in. The four asks the table what they saw, and no one can say for certain if the chip hit the felt first. The dealer says she believes the chip hit the felt first and that she mistakenly put the all-in button in front of him. The four rules it is a call, which agitates player A further. A 10 to 15 minute debate ensues, where a second floor is called, and ultimately the room manager is called. They review all of the relevant information and hold a short conference away from the table. Eventually, the action is ruled a call. Player B shows a flush, and player A shows pocket eights for a flopped full house and takes down the pot. While I think the floor made the technically correct ruling based on the only information available, it is clear to me that player B was taking advantage of player A to show down what he knew was a marginal hand cheaply. Player B was a talkative, obnoxious local, and everyone at the table clearly knew that the older gentleman wanted to go all in. Do floors allow for a deviation of a technical rule for situations like this to protect the integrity of the game?
All right, well, welcome Elliot back. He's yes. Settled in New York, folks, and getting ready to reopen that Rivers room soon, so come in and say hi to him once he does. So here's what he says on this. There is no clear confirmation of a late declaration of the bet other than player B's protest. The dealer initially ruled this is an all-in bet, and no other players could confirm that the declaration was made prior to or after the chip hitting the table. Player A was not shooting an angle by gauging their opponent's reaction and was trying to get their money in the pot. They just didn't do that efficiently. I am not usually inclined to overrule a player that had no ill intent. Again, the dealer initially called this a raise too. That bit of information is not entirely irrelevant. This very situation is a judgment call and context matters. In this case, context is the primary criteria over the black and white letter of the law. Poker room is not a court of law, and therefore technicalities do not have to stand in the way of fairness when making a ruling. As you alluded to in your closing question, a poker room's discretion to make judgment calls when exercised correctly and prudently is necessary to maintain the integrity of the game. In similar situations, I have ruled against the player attempting to raise. I have also ruled in favor of the raiser. For this situation, with the information provided, I would have ruled for the raiser with no reservation.
I agree with that. I do. I mean, it's silly to think the timing of it, you know, split second or something, that as the chip is touching and he says all in, verbal is binding, and it's just ridiculous. That's just semantics that you're trying to save, you know, a bet and get the showdown for what you bet just because this guy said all in a second or a split second as the chip hits the felt. You know, it's, I don't know. I mean, to get back to Scott's poker 101 stuff that we always said, just say what you want to do and don't do anything else and then move the chips out, you know. But still.
Yeah, so I agree with Elliot. I would have ruled this an all-in raise here. I'm not as concerned by this silly timing over the chip hitting the ground and blah, blah, blah. Plus, as he said, you had the extra information of the dealer announcing all-in and putting the all-in button. So very clearly, she or he, well, I forget which was, initially thought this was a raise, and then only under later thought realized they made a mistake or thought they made a mistake on it. So, you know, this player B talking about protecting their stake in their hand is BS. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, there is times when you do need to make sure that there's a proper ruling for the integrity of the game. But this clearly, to me, was an angle shot. This guy looking at it like, oh, man, I've lost this hand, but maybe I haven't, and I'm not willing to put all my money in. So let me call a technicality here so I can see showdown and maybe still win this pot. And that frustrates me. But, yeah, just to repeat what you said, I'm like, this whole thing could have been avoided by not doing this stupid single chip thing. I will be in soapbox three for the show, and I hope that's one. I have never liked this single chip thing. I just do not like it. There's been hours and hours of discussion at Poker TDA summits over it, which I think is ridiculous. Just don't allow it. But there are rooms and poker managers that like it, so it's going to be here. But if you're going to do this single chip thing, you better be clear on what's going to happen. It's much safer, as we always say, as you said, just to say what you want to say and then push the chips in afterwards, and then there's no question. And the single chip thing is interpreted different ways in different casinos, folks, too. You know, I mean, there's a TDA rule on it, but that doesn't mean in cash games it's different here or there. So, you know, you might think that you are calling or raising with that single chip, but that room might see it differently. So, again, just say all in and sit there.
Yep.
You don't even have to put chips in when you say all in. All you have to do is say all in and have the dealer put the button in front of you and you're done.
Yep.
No reason to put throw that single chip. I mean, it's wasted energy, too. That's the thing I don't get, is people go to extra lengths to get themselves in trouble.
Plus, it's one more thing that is a tell. It's one more way for them to analyze how you threw that chip in. Or, you know, it's just sit there. Say all in.
All in. Put your head down and you're done and let the hand play out. So, yeah, a lot of blame to go all around here, folks.
Well, I'd like to take a moment to get on my soapbox now, but in a positive manner. Malcolm O'Malley has been with us for 10 years today. This playing of this O'Malley's move marks the 10-year anniversary that he said, hey guys, I really think that I can do this. I really think that I can take over for the 1 minute mystery that we used to have. And he has been nothing but professional for us. He's always provided quality material and hands, just a great guy. And I want to thank him from the bottom of my heart. And I'm assuming I'm speaking for Scott as well. Yeah, just fantastic stuff. You know, I did tell him a year ago that I was retiring in September of 2020, and so I'm sorry he's not going to make 10 years. He would have to hit a one-outer, you know, to make 10 years, and turns out he did. He hit the one-outer and made 10 years. So if he makes 11, you know, I don't know. I'm going to be pretty I'm going to be a distant memory, I think, if he tries to make 11. I don't know. We'll see. But congratulations, Malcolm. Really appreciate everything you've done for Antiup and for the Antiup Nation. And without further ado, here we go with a brand new O'Malley's Move.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing in a 50-cent, $1 no-limit hold'em home game. This is a pretty good game. Most of the players know a bit about the game, and it plays fairly straightforward. The buy-in is 200, and most players buy in for the max. The game is seven-handed. We started the hand with 250 up 50. The blinds post, the under the gun makes a standard raise to 250. This player is tight and aggressive. From under the gun, even in a shorthanded game, we can expect him to be playing premium cards here. Nines are better pairs, ace-king, ace-queen, somewhere in that range. He sits with 275. It's folded to us on the button, and we look down at the jack of hearts, jack of clubs. We could raise here, both for value and for range definition, but if this player has any of those premium holdings, we might get blown off of this hand without seeing a flop. I like a call here. We might be good, and if we hit a jack and he's got something like aces or kings, we will most likely get his stack. We call. The blinds fold. The pot is 650, and the flop is exactly what we wanted. The queen of clubs, jack of diamonds, seven of clubs comes down. The under the gun insta-checks. The insta-check is interesting. If this were something like ace king of clubs, I think he'd bet here. I also think he would have bet with aces or kings or even ace queen. Unless he had made up his mind to check any flop to see what we are going to do. I like a bet here. If he does in fact have aces or kings, we might get the money in right now. I'm not overly worried about the clubs, so I'm going for value here. We make it 350 to go. Our opponent quickly calls. There's 1350 in the pot, and the turn is the tray of hearts. This time our opponent leads into us. He makes it $10 to go. Well, this is interesting. Are the aces finally coming alive? If so, now is our moment. We make it $30 to go. Our opponent stops for a moment, checks his cards, asks us what we have behind, and then slowly counts out 100. So, what's the move?
It's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com. Let me start there. AdvancedPokerTraining.com, because if you do what I said, you're not going to get there.
You're not going to get there.
Hand of the week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If you haven't won something for us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. And Drew Carey's back, and, you know, we always like to make jokes here, but I'm not going to do it today.
Okay.
Other than spin that wheel, Drew. I know, but Drew's always sending some great hands, so I'm glad to have him back here. And I love his first line of this, Chris. He's like, sorry in advance, Chris, if this is the hand that keeps the show going another week.
And it is, Sue. It is.
It's technically not true. We've got 12 hands lined up. So
you don't have 12 weeks left, buddy. So
we've got three more months of great quality listener submitted content to keep us going for the four listeners that have.
Do you remember when Kelly Ripa was unceremoniously dumped on TV and they kept bringing in these subs to be the co-host with her? You're going to have to do that to get me to play three more months. You're going to have to bring in, like, you know, Brent and Faso and co-host a show with you, because I don't know if I can make it another 3 months. We're going to have to see.
Well, yeah, someone suggested that we do that anyhow, so we'll see.
Good, do it.
I just can't imagine the show without your my wife-like disdain on the other side. All right, so Drew says, I finally got back to playing live since COVID, and I find myself playing 1-2 no limit at an Indiana casino. I played the night before as well, bought in for below the max, 50 min, 200 max for $100. Worked out well that session, so I kept with the same buy-in for this one. And I'm going to pause here to say, I like this 50 min, 200 max. I think that's a good, safe game for recreational players.
Oh, yeah.
I think once you get them to 300, then I think it gets a little bigger. I think a 200 max is pretty good. I know there's probably players out there that disagree with that, but I like a recreational 1-2 no limit, because not all 1-2 no limit games are made the same. So if you're a recreational player, I would definitely look for a 50 min 200 max. I think that's fantastic. So, all right, so soapbox, what, six?
Looks like we're doing pretty good today.
I'm worked up. I'm amped up, Chris. All right, so our hero says, it worked out well that session, so I kept with the same buy-in for this one. I've been playing for about an hour, hadn't shown down a hand yet, won a few hands as the initial raiser with a C-bet, and sit with about my starting stack of $100. I assume at this point my image is tight, if not a bit nitty, given the other players have been a tad splashy. It sounds like a cartoon, nitty and splashy. hand starts with the table six-handed, and after a couple of players took a break and left, it's been six-handed for about an orbit. There's one limper, and I'm in the cutoff and look down at the queen of diamonds, ten of diamonds.
I don't know. This used to be Scott's favorite hand until you learned how to play poker, right?
I'm not convinced that I've learned to play poker yet, but yes, as I've gotten better playing poker.
Yeah, this is not a good hand. You know, I mean, if it's something like you're going to play to your persona at the table and you've got this image where you're tight, maybe even nitty, then your cards really don't matter. If you're like, I'm going to come alive here for this one hand because I want to be able to take advantage of someone in here that I think, you know, might fold to my aggressiveness or something because I'm known for only showing down aces or something, that'd be one thing. But it seems like you hadn't shown any hands at all, so they don't, even though you may seem like you're tight or nitty, if you're not showing these hands, they don't know that the only time you enter a pot is with ace-ace. So if you're going to be aggressive with queen-ten, you better be sure that you're playing the people and not the cards, I think, especially if, you know, we're not on the button. So, you know, we really got to make sure that when we make a raise, we end up being the last to act, you know, that we get everybody else to fold behind us. But normally, if I'm going to play queen-ten suited like this, I'm going to be looking for other limpers so that I'm getting into the pot for the minimum, and I'll have the odds to kind of draw to what I'm hoping to hit as a flush or a straight. So I'm not real big on playing this hand unless I'm just playing the people. And if I'm playing the people, I'm raising with it. If I'm playing the cards and I'm just hoping to make a hand, then I'm limping. So I know I'm supposed to be sort of definitive with this, but it's really tough because this is a real nominal hand. It's marginal at best, and I would probably just limp or muck it, to be honest with you, because I don't think I have, from what he described, I don't think he has the image that is strong enough to make them believe that he's holding like ace-ace if he makes a big raise here. And then even if he does, and he does make them think that, you don't know what they're going to call with. Because if they think that you have a strong hand, they're going to call with crap, hoping to hit crap, and you're going to think your over pair is good or your top pair is good. Meanwhile, he's going to sneak in there with a baby toupee or something. So, you know, image is everything, as they used to say in those commercials. But, you know, you really got to really understand what they think of you and what you know, how they what you know about them before you get involved with a hand like Queen 10. And you got to make sure you have position. If you don't have position on top of it, you're already starting, you know, with a couple of strikes against you. So generally, I would limp or fold this hand.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and make a case for all three, but I feel fairly confident about what I'm going to do here. So the case for folding is, as you mentioned, this is not a great hand. So don't need to take chances in a cash game with sub-quality hands. So that's the case for folding. The case for calling is that this is a hand that can flop big. So this is our old push and pull analogy. This is a hand where you might want to pull people in. So if you hit your straight or your flush, you'll have more money to get out of them. The case to be raising is that it's not a great hand, but it's a hand that could flop big. It's a shorthanded table, so you can't be as picky as you want to be. And we are sort of in position here. I mean, we only got the button behind us, right? So, to the rest of the hand. So, we could put in a raise here and use our image, as you mentioned. If people do think we're tight, they'll give us credit for a stronger hand than we have. Now, I will also say you can use that image to your benefit with the limp here as well, too. So you can limp now to pull people in the pot, and then depending on how confident you are in your game and to be able to outplay some folks, then you could use that tight image to win this pot even without that flush and
straight. Yes, yeah.
So that's why I probably am going to I probably would limp here and try to use that image if I don't get the flop that I want. So
I agree.
All right. Let's see. Here it says table standard raise seems to be between $7 and $10. So to account for the limper, I make it $10 to go. The button calls, as does the limper. So we're three-handed, and the flop is the five of clubs, ten of spades, five of diamonds, and the limper checks, and it's on us.
Okay. Okay, so this is good. We hit top pair, but this is how you get into trouble, too. You're always going to have in the back of your mind, you know, did somebody play ace five? You know, and I know I'm saying it because it's the hand of the week, and we always deal with people want to know how they could play it better because they lost. So immediately what comes to mind is a five. And I have to admit, though, when I am playing and a pair comes on the board like that, I still always wonder that. The first scenario go through my head is the action that's been done and the story that's been told at this point, is a five possible? I always think that, or whatever the key, you know, the paired card would be. So I wonder to myself, you know, can this person have nine in their hand? It's 9-9-3 or something, and I have a pair of tens. So I like that we have the top pair. I hate that we have a horrible kicker, and I like this one diamond on the board that helps us maybe with a backdoor if we get lucky. You know, the person limped, who limped, I guess, made the call too, right? Is that what we said? So there's three-handed. So, I mean, you got to put something out there because you raised and, you know, you just have to bet. It's just, this is the type of hand where you got to be weary. So let's see, there's, how much in the pot did we say? 16?
Let's see, we make a 10 to go, so 30 is the small blind. So.
Yeah, okay, so it's like 30, so I bet like half the pot, I guess I bet 15 or so.
Of course, that's pre-rake, so I don't know what the rake is.
Right, right.
Yeah, so... I absolutely agree. I mean, you know, you're always expected to make a c-bet in poker. So it's always great when we actually hit our hand to make that c-bet. Now, I have every bit of concern that Chris does, but at this point we paired. We've got a diamond out there as well, too. So, I mean, we absolutely have to bet here, I think. So, and I would normally bet half the pot, so that's kind of what I'd be shooting at, whatever half it is after the rake. All right, our hero says, I make it 16 to go, so that is definitely right around half the pot.
Yeah.
A little bit. Button calls fairly quickly, but the limper folds. All right, so we're heads up now, going to turn, and the turn is the six of spades. So our board now is five of clubs, ten of spades, five of diamonds, six of spades, and we are first to act.
Okay, well, the card hurts a little because it's not a diamond to give us that extra insurance, and it also puts another spade on there, so it hurts us with him getting the backdoor flush if it's possible. The problem I have here is there was no draw at all after that flop, and you made the comment that he fairly quickly called. Now, we always talk about a lot of times people are calling quickly because they're happy with the amount that they can draw their, to their flush or their straight, and there is zero draw there after that flop. So why is he calling quickly? Is he calling quickly because he wants to steal from us on the turn, you know, doing the old float thing? Or is he calling quickly because he's got the five and he's glad you made a bet and he's hoping that the limper will call quickly too? This is a precarious situation. I think I'm slowing down. I might still bet just because there's spades on the board, and I still have top pair with a, you know, a paint kicker. But I may slow down a little bit. I don't think I would make my standard, you know, half pot bet here. I might go a little less. So if there was 30 and 16, and 16 is 32, so there's 62 in the pot, you know, I may put out like a $30 bet or something, you know, but generally it might be even less. It might be like 20. You know, I just don't. And it doesn't necessarily make it suspicious when you don't bet, you know, in the exact parameters that everyone recommends to bet on every turn. You know, it could just be, hey, I'm looking for value at this hand, too. They may read it that way. So, I don't know. I don't want to just start risking a ton of money on this horrible hand of two pair with a queen kicker, and there's so much danger out there. But at the same time, I want to put some money out there so that I'm not giving him just his free reign of hitting a turn card or a better over card. You know, who knows? He could have king, queen of spades, and he was just floating us. And now he's backed into, you know, two overs and a flush draw. I don't want to let him just get there for free. So, I don't know. I don't feel real comfortable making it a $30 bet, though. I just feel like I think maybe something a little smaller, 20, 25.
Yeah, so there are definitely dangers in checking here. But I think there's also dangers in betting here, too. I think you summed it up well. When you quickly call, it either means that you're on a draw or you've got a made hand that you're not ready to pull the trigger with, right? Mm-hmm. So with no draws being out there, I definitely give more credence to a 5 or a 10. And, you know, we have a lot of 10s beat, but not all of them, right? So it definitely feels like he has something now that he's not drawing. And again, we're hoping that it's a weaker 10 than us, and it's a 5, we're screwed. So I kind of like slowing down here, checking, and then letting him make a play at us if I'm wrong at that. So if we check here, obviously he's got two options. He's going to check behind, so it's not going to cost us anything, but gives him a chance to catch up, as you mentioned, if he's really on something else that we thought of. Or he's going to bet, and maybe now we let him take control here, and if it's not a big enough bet, I might call, and then we'll see what happens on the river. You know, we still could hit a queen, we still could hit a 10. Obviously, diamonds aren't going to work for us this time. So I think I might be a little bit more cautious here. I'm not waving the white flag, but I'm shifting the power to him to see how he reacts. So,
okay. Okay, well, it's good that we do different things, so that way we can just analyze both situations.
All right, let's see. Our hero says, this creates a flush draw, of course, but not one I'm too concerned with at the moment, but can't be entirely ruled out either, given the assumed wide calling range of the action, range of the button in this spot. I decided to keep up the aggression, thinking the villain's call on my c-bet was an assumption that I hadn't hit the flop too hard, and since I hadn't been too active, maybe a float to steal it on the turn. I bet $30 into the squiggly $60 pot, leaving me only $35 behind. The villain raises to 60.
Well, I mean, I think I can fold now. I think we're dead, but I forgot how much money we had. I wasn't thinking. You know, if I'm going to bet half my stack, I'm probably going to shove it anyway. So all the more reason for me to bet less on that turn. Now, if I only have 35 and he makes it 60, I don't think I can fold for 30, and if I only have $5 left, I might as well just shove. I mean, it just seems silly.
Anything he has, well, not to the five, I guess, right? But yeah, but
I'm hoping he has 9-10. We're hoping he has 9-10 or Jack 10. Yep. But yeah, if he has a five, we have what, two outs? hit a 10. So, yeah, I can't fold for that. I mean, what am I going to do with $35? I'm going to have to rebuy anyway. And, you know, I want to at least have that information moving forward that this guy is capable of playing some 5 if he does, or if he's capable of playing Jack 10 to a raise. You know, I want to know what he has for $35 more. I mean, you can't fold top pair, you know, without being rock solid that you know this guy's beating you. And even then, $35 might even be worth the information, you know, for moving ahead on this table. So I'm just going to shove.
Yeah, so mathematically, we're looking at 120 in the pot, and we're being asked to put 35 in. So that's good odds for our holding right now, I think. So that's an easy math decision, I think, for me. And again, I used to get this during Hands of the Week, and it's a weakness I need to figure out, is remembering where our stack is. And I know you forgot where we were, too. This is all the more reason I would have checked this turn, and because if he would have bluffed all in, he would be more encouraged to bluff all in, right? If we mm-hmm. checked, and then we could have easily made that call as well, too, because it's only going to be, whatever it is there. So
65.
Still getting the money in. In either of these scenarios, we're still getting the money in anyhow, right? So let's make him really bluff at it. Maybe he thinks he's bluffing at this too. It's a really bad bluff if he is, because you know the math just doesn't make sense for us to fold here unless we completely had nothing. So I don't know. So I don't think he really thought this through, unless, of course, he has the hand. So I guess we'll find out what he has.
Well, the other situation, too, that you brought up was, you know, it also gives you an opportunity to get away from the hand a lot easier if you have to put 65 in the middle instead of 35 or 30. Because if you don't bet at all, like you said, and the guy shoves for 65, you might say, now, in this case, it's probably a call just because you have top pair. But there might be one of those borderline hands where you're saying, okay, this gave me an opportunity to get away from this marginal hand at this stage and not risk any more money like we just did. Now, in my scenario, I was going to bet 20. So that would mean if it was 20 and then a guy shoves, well, then I'd have to be risking more. So the pot odds come down. They're not as good. So there are opportunities for you by the way you bet. That's why they like to keep the pot small and stuff, so they can make better decisions. And I think in this situation, if he did check, like Scott said, if the guy did shove, you can get away from it. If you really believe he has a 5, or you think, you know, I've only invested a little in this hand and I got a crappy kicker, he probably has a 5. Or you could still hit a flush draw on the river, you know, by semi-bluffing here. So to me, I like the idea of betting less. It gives you a better chance to get away from a shove if you have to. If you bet more, now you have to put all your chips in the middle with top pair, horrible kicker. So, you know, there's always that side of the coin as well.
Right, yeah. All right, our hero says, a few things running through my head at this point. I'm pretty pot committed here, and I first think the villain wants a call knowing this. Rings the alarm bell regarding a random 5. Next, I consider that he could be betting the flush draw, but given my stack, I wasn't convinced he'd do that here, knowing I'm committed. If he did pick up the draw, might as well just call and save the $30 if it doesn't hit, so I eliminate that concern for this move. I then go to another thinking level that maybe I shouldn't have, and maybe wishfully thinking that he's trying to steal or representing the 5 with a raise that I would have to call, meaning I would fold. Not feeling great about it, I make the call, leaving me the $5 bus fare behind as we go to the river. River is the 8 of spades, so our final board is 5 of clubs, 10 of spades, 5 of diamonds, 6 of spades, 8 of spades. I ask the villain if he wants the final $5, and he politely declines like the gentleman he is. We check it down, and he shows the 8 of clubs, 5 of clubs for a full house.
Oh, 8-5.
Oof, wow. Let's see. Okay, he says, oh, I'll contemplate a reload. I'm dealt in the next hand with $5 in play. Oops. See, ace-king offsuit and throw the bus fare in, ultimately lose the queen 9 and decide it's not my night and call it early. I'm wondering if there's any way you would play this differently. I thought queen 10 was an opening hand here given the 6-handed table. I hope for position when I open, but didn't get it. So either slow down, turn and check, or fold to the raise come to mind, ways to save a little bit.
Well, I think we kind of addressed all the things that we would have done differently in this hand. Again, I go way back to the beginning of the hand and say queen 10 is not a great hand. And while of course it's shorthanded, and you might be able to grab out one of, you know, Sklansky's, you know, starting hand requirement things and find queen 10 as a good starting hand, in a shorthanded table at that point. But to me, I mean, you really have to know your persona at the table. You have to know what these people are going to do to a raise and to an aggressive bet after the flop and all of that. And, you know, so if I remember correctly, there was a limper to us in the cutoff. So normally you would make it, like, so me, when I'm playing at a 1-2 table, you know, they're making it 10, 15 to go pre-flop, right? Now you've got a limper on top of it. Now he said the raises were between 7 and 10. Well, you made it 10 with a limper. Maybe you make it a little more and that button says, nah, I'm not calling 8-5. Or he knows you're nitty. And that's what we talked about earlier. If he knows you're nitty and you're playing a hand that's not really strong, he's going to be playing crap to try to counteract the big cards you're going to be playing or the strong hands you're going to be playing. And so that could have gone through your head too. Clearly in this situation, he was saying, it's only 10 bucks and there's already a limper in here. We might even get the limper to come along. I'm going to be in position this whole hand. A suited 8-5 is like, you know, what the hell? It's worth it with the flyer, especially if he's up a little bit at one of these games where you can buy in for 50. A lot of times people are buying in for 50 because they want to get it all in on a flush draw and double their money and walk away. And a lot of times they miss it and all these stacks start to grow. And so for me, $10 on the button is, I could do that with any two cards. And when I have somebody who I think is nitty is coming in for a raise, I'm thinking he's doing it with big cards or an overpair to a 10. And if I hit trips on him, I'm going to get a stack. And that's exactly what happened. So if you have that persona, there are consequences too. And that's one of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think that's a real good explanation of what happened here. A simpler one might be just that you weren't going to be able to change the outcome of this hand, I don't think. I mean, obviously this guy, for whatever reason, thinks that 8-5 suited is worth a call to a raise. And then you gave some points as to why maybe he would have. But generally speaking, you'd be happy that he made that call, right? So, yeah. I mean, it's got unlucky that both he really hit his hand hard and we hit our hand hard enough to feel emboldened. And so it was a perfect storm of crud for us to happen there. But if he was going to continue to play 8-5, then I think you can, in the long run, make some money off this guy. You know, because he was going to have to hit his hand there to beat us, I think.
Right.
He's going to be able to outplay us with our stack there. So it was just an unlucky thing. But I think he made the right call on deciding that it's not your night and going home, too, right? So, I mean, this, the bigger mistake, I think, here is to reload and lose that second thing because your confidence is shaken. So kudos to you for knowing it's time to go home, even though you lost your $5 bus there by not picking it up and leaving. So
one thing I will say, according to my notes here, it said he had 8-5 of clubs, but the flop had the 5 of clubs in it. So I'm hoping, I don't know what that means to the outcome of the way the hand was or would have played any differently, but I doubt it. But anyway, yeah, Drew, thanks for sending the hand as always, and sorry this one didn't turn out your way. I'm Chris Cosenza. We'll see you at the tables.
Anti-Up is a production of antiupmagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.